Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Cool start to the week. It's a real feel of 50. Sadly, your hosts are not that cool, but here we are again for a brand new week of Sabres
Live. Speak for yourself.
And how in the world is John Tortorella going to get his clothes back from Raleigh? That's the follow-up question
to the Stanley Cup Final. Forgetting stuff in the closet.
No, he said he was going to go back and get it when they return for Game 7.
I know, but they ain't going back. Phone call. It's a
Canes have got the cup.
Get your travel person to call. You don't even call. You don't want to call.
Can you imagine being his travel person?
Yeah, no.
Holy.
That would not be good.
What did you think, my friend? What did you think?
Carolina wins the cup. I mean, we did ask all of you before the final started, which team do you not want to see the cup, right?
Carolina. What was the result on that?
Carolina was definitely the team nobody wanted to
really?
See. Really? It was maybe.
I don't know.
Like
I feel
70,
like the longer
30.
This went on, I was reminded that everybody hates Vegas.
You know what? That is true. And look, you have to account for variable change. And that's in the movie 21. Have you ever seen that movie 21 Blackjack? And he talks about the three doors and. Anyway.
Can't remember.
Variable change. There was variable changes in that series. Freddie Anderson, which was a knee injury in Game 2, not a head injury in Game 3. He played through it, got pulled, never returned. Brendan Bussey coming in was great, was fantastic. The Vegas Golden Knights losing William Karlsson in Game 5, not available for Game 6. Those are all variable change that affects the series. And then as you got to see what both teams were like, I'm like, Carolina's the better team. Mm-hmm. I thought Vegas was the better team because they had just swept Colorado. But I'm like, no, Carolina.
They were also up 2-1 after Bussey came in and gave up an unfortunately terrible goal in double overtime, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's funny because it could have gone a different way. And you're right. The Karlsson injury ends up being a huge one for a team in Vegas.
You're changing your lines.
Yeah, and Jack couldn't score.
Jack couldn't score.
So that's a real thing.
He hit a crossbar. And the reaction out of Jack when he hit the crossbar was one that we've seen here in Buffalo a lot, is that the next play, he was on the half wall in the power play. And he made a pass, and he missed a pass, and I don't think he moved from that spot for 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. The puck was behind his net, and he was still probably down low. Like,
but
it
that's
just
what Carolina does to
defeated,
you, right? They frustrate you, and they showed the depth from the opening face-off of the first series this year against Ottawa, and it rolled all the way through to the point where everybody knows now of the line that features two young players and an old dog in Taylor Hall, right? Like,
yes,
Stankoven and Blake and Hall became a trio that was a consistent factor. They opened the scoring. Hall ends up with the cup-winning goal because they were perfect defensively.
Yes.
And yet Blake had the most points for the team, and Stankoven seemingly was involved in most post-whistle scrums. Like, he became such a target for Vegas's most physical players, and he stood up to every single pop that he took.
Funny, they showed an interview of Taylor Hall when he was with the Windsor Spitfire of the OHL, and then he got drafted, obviously number one to the Oilers, but before his draft year, and he says, I just want to win the cup. He looks exactly the same.
Gray beard, though.
Grayer beard, yes. But he had a beard because it was in the playoff in Windsor. The beard was different, but he looks exactly the same. So he's the old guy, but he looks young, like Jackson Blake and Logan Stankoven. I know Taylor Hall scores that first goal. Great. We've seen it so many times, Carolina getting behind the defense of the other team. Montreal, Philly, Ottawa, and now Vegas. A quick, turnover at the blue line. Boom, you go up the ice. One player gets a breakaway. Not a great goal on Carter Hart. Wasn't his fault. And look, the series, it wasn't on Carter Hart. People asking questions, about Aiden Hill maybe playing. That didn't make or break the series. Was Carter Hart great? No, he was not. But in Game 6, he was okay. Mm-hmm. It just, Vegas never got going offensively. Never got to put pressure. Once they changed to Brendan Bussey to say, we're going to test that kid. And then the kid got better. In Game 5, he was good. In Game 6, he was excellent. And that's the big thing. And also, when you talk about Stankoven and Blake, the second goal, the 2-0 goal, that really hurt Vegas.
One that ends up going off Vegas as well, despite
off
all the
Marner,
heart.
But it's the play before. There was a puck battle one in the neutral zone, a puck battle one in the corner, a puck battle one in the half wall. And it was, Stankoven, who's, 5'8", 160, and Blake, who's 5'11", 180. Like, those two guys outplayed, outquickness, outmuscled Vegas, and they created all them turnovers and then end up in the back of the net.
Do you not look at Stankoven and go, by the time his career ends, he could be playing at 5'8", 185. Like, he could put on, like, dad strength and weight as time goes on. Like, he's so sturdy.
He's
and
thick.
For
a 165, 170
kid. That's why the
kid.
Numbers don't even, like, I'm like, he's got to be more than that. And I think, you know, evolution of time, you know, we may see that with him. Ultimately, it was the old dog, the dad of the group Jordan Staal, who wins the Conn Smythe. Agree, disagree?
Agree. Agree 100%. And it's funny because Jordan Staal's daughter at the press conference after the game says, why did you punch that guy game one? Now you go back to game one against Ottawa, and they ended up winning 12 of the first 13 games in the playoffs, going 12-1 to get to the finals.
Needed it overtime heroics, with, though. You know,
yeah, like, but I mean, started with Jordan Staal fighting Brady Tkachuk 3 seconds into game one, and then obviously scoring in 5 straight games. You know, oldest player to win the Conn Smythe. Now, instant trivia, and this one may be tough. Who's the youngest player to win the Conn Smythe?
I don't know.
1986. Patrick Waugh.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the second youngest to win the Conn Smythe? 2006. Cam Ward,
yeah.
So Cam Ward's the second youngest to win the Conn Smythe. Jordan Staal's the oldest to win the Conn Smythe. Mm-hmm. And that happened 20 years. And
thank
every
goodness it wasn't
years.
Another goalie.
Well, exactly. It could have been Brendan Bussey. He got some votes, by the way.
He played 3 games.
I know.
Like,
he got some votes. I didn't get that. But Jordan Staal was the Conn Smythe. But it's funny how, you know, you look at 2006, it was Cam Ward. It was between Martin Gerber and Cam Ward playing, we know what happened in the conference final. Yeah. Carolina wins their second cup in their history.
Yeah, but they don't win it without Gerber that year.
Exactly. Well, they don't win it without Anderson and Bussey this year.
Not necessarily. Anderson was on a roll that could have allowed him to win. And we're never going to know the answer to the question.
We'll never know.
The point is, they lost the game that he exited in. So it's not like you can say that, you know, they wouldn't have come back with Anderson and a healthy Anderson. That's the key in all of this,
Anderson,
right?
Anderson would have been the question. If he'd played and said, I'm going to push through a little bit my knee injury and play, maybe that doesn't go their way.
Yeah.
Knowing that Bussey was there and Bussey was 31-6-2 this year, it allowed for the transition.
We did see something historic in the presentation of the Conn Smythe to Jordan Staal, and ultimately the cup was him getting acknowledged for his face-off percentage. Anyway, more on that later. Freddie, and did you see Bettman stumble to try to spit out just how good he was on face-offs? And you know,
like, face-offs only matter when they matter.
But this mattered more, and that was the handoff of the cup to Freddie Anderson.
You know, I think it was Emily Kaplan, ESPN, ABC. She's like, Jordan, who are you going to give the cup to? And he looked over, because I didn't think about it. And he looks at Freddie Anderson, and look, Freddie was a big part of it, and obviously there's the emotional side of it, losing Claude Lemieux, his agent and good friend, you know, just before
before
the finals and everything, very hard. And then Taylor Hall, obviously, Taylor Hall is a big part of what was interesting last year, the Mikko Rantanen trade. He goes to Carolina, then Rantanen goes to Dallas, and they get Stankoven, and they bring in Taylor Hall because there needed to be money retention. Mm-hmm. And Taylor Hall, big part of moving forward. So, yes, that all trickled down. But you mentioned the face-offs, and I know I'm big on face-offs don't matter until they matter. But when you're running at 70% or close to in face-offs.
Right, which was a record for the final, which is why the commissioner was
appropriately pointing it out.
But I'm just like, having fun because we have fun.
We have fun with it. But I can't not think that every time Jordan Staal was in for a face-off, it felt like he won it and something happened after that.
But to your point, and you're the best in the business at pointing this stuff out, is the number of times a win or a loss does not translate on a play the way you would expect. So it's not like everything Staal did resulted in something. There were many times where it went the wrong way.
But Carolina was so prepared for everything.
Which is the critical key when we're talking about these situations. So Brendan Moore hugging the cup, to me, was actually pretty amazing. He's legendary for his strength, right? And he could do anything with it. I thought his need and desire to embrace the cup that has eluded him for the past 20 years since winning it for the one and only time as a player was amazing.
He almost looked like he did when he picked it up in 2006 and did the choppy steps and then he lifted. This one he hugs, right? And look, 8 years with Carolina, not the success. He couldn't beat the Florida Panthers, and then the Florida Panthers are not in this year, so it opened the door, and they go 16-3. 16-3 is a dominating run to the Stanley Cup Final.
In today's NHL, absolutely incredible.
100%. Even the Oilers or the Islanders or whatever, it's still dominating. And Rod Brind'Amour, to me, the adjustments, the small adjustments that he made, the decisions that he made. And I'm not talking about in the finals. There wasn't a lot of adjustments in the finals. The players were there. But he threw the run, right? The matchups. I felt like, why is he playing Jordan Staal against Jack Eichel? The best player for Vegas is Mitch Marner. But you know what? Being able to neutralize Jack Eichel and Jordan Staal the way that he played was one of the biggest key mm-hmm. in the Stanley Cup final, and that was Rod Brind'Amour.
Right, and obviously all of the top players got negated on the Vegas side after the high-scoring start to the series.
Yes.
And you mentioned Carolina's ability with quick strikes. That was, to a certain extent, something that they were able to stop Vegas from doing because Mark Stone was continually getting behind the defense early, right? And it was classic Carolina, and that's why they've been one of the winningest teams in the league under Brind'Amour, and now have in fact won a second Stanley Cup in franchise history. Congratulations to the Canes. My only question is, what can the Sabres marketing team come up with for this coming season that doesn't guarantee a similar result from a cup standpoint than what happened this year? We celebrated 05-06 and the reunion, right?
Oh, my gosh,
and all year long, I was like, oh, my God, I hope Carolina doesn't win now that we're talking about 05-06. And look,
if we celebrate 06-07 and President's Trophy next year, does that mean Anaheim wins
the
cup?
That's what I'm saying.
And Ottawa gets the final.
So what
whatever.
Marketing strategy do we need to take to ensure the best possible outcome? Obviously, it has to come from within.
You know
the Sabres have to do it. And we got all summer to talk about how they're going to do it. And
Carolina copied the Sabres a little bit this year. Sabres had the beer Sabre. Carolina came up with the beer skate after
didn't
the
Sabre. Didn't even
sit
properly for a while.
And exactly.
But so, here's what does sit well with people. Rasmus Dahlin is a second-team All-Star.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about a Sabre in this fashion since Ryan Miller in 2010 when he was a first-teamer. So
I know how much that means to you because you always talk about All-Star appearances are like whatever. But to be voted on this first and second All-Star teams at the end of the year, that's important. That's a big one.
It is critical. And I think it's also eye-opening based on just coming through the awards portion of the postseason.
Yes.
Who won the Hart? Who won the Norris? Who are the best? Werenski won the Norris. Vasilevsky won the Vezina. He's on there. Robertson is really interesting as a first-teamer, right?
Winger,
and that's awesome for him. And Dahlin is on the second team. And I think there's another interesting wrinkle to this, which I am
Logan Thompson
100% on board with based
yes.
on the numbers, Logan Thompson being there. But tell me what you think it means in the big picture that Dahlin is now, again, in new territory 8 years into his career.
Well, we knew Dahlin was a top three Norris finalist, right? And you had
and a hard candidate, in essence, based on the number of votes he got this year for the
Hart. Yeah, he was a hard candidate, but you had Werenski, Makar, and Dahlin as a top three for the Norris. So usually that puts you in the top four, but you don't know because it's voted by different people and all of it. Now, knowing that you put Dahlin on that second All-Star team, and you look at the players that are on there. Second All-Star team. Got Evan Bouchard, led the defense in points this year, an amazing season. Dahlin, Cole Caulfield, 51 goals. David Pastrnak. You got Logan Thompson, who was not in the top three, Vezina. And he's being recognized as potentially the second best goalie in the league from that standpoint. I love this for Rasmus Dahlin. I never really paid much attention to the first and second All-Star team when I was playing because I knew with the players that were good and not good and were overhyped or not. Dahlin's not overhyped. Dahlin has been building year after year, not making the playoffs for this season to have been the leader that he was. And pretty amazing what's happened for him.
Mattias Samuelsson did pick up a third place vote for the all NHL teams, which is really cool. The only thing that blew my mind was that on the all rookie team, somehow Schaefer was one vote shy of being unanimous. Like, how could it not have been unanimous? Oh my goodness.
Somebody, that's like the French judge at the Olympics that put 6.9 instead of a 9.6, and then the whole Russian controversy. That's
so
what
it was mildly disturbing, which is appropriate for this time of the show.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
Okay, we always like to keep tabs on the Sabres here in the offseason, and Missing Curfew podcast with Shane O'Brien and Jordan Schmaltz featured Josh Doan. So let's dive in a little on what he had to say about someone we just mentioned, and that was Mattias Samuelsson.
He's the best. So he's one of those guys who got there right away, and
I remember talking to my old man about it because he missed like a couple of days in practice, then came back, and I'm like, this guy is unbelievable. Like, I was talking on the phone, like, I can't believe this is someone that's been in and out of the lineup last year, and fans are kind of trying to get him to buy him out, and now I'm like he's arguably the best defenseman I've defensively played against in my career up to this point in practice. And then we got into a little bit of preseason, you can kind of see him finding his game, and I think he had such a hot start that it was like his confidence in himself just kind of took off, and now he's arguably the best contract in the league. Yeah. So it was one of those things where everyone was calling for a buyout and the fans wanted him out, and which I thought was crazy. And then you play with him and you get to know him, and he's an unbelievable dude. Everyone in the room loves him, and he's kept our group together really, really well this year. And I mean, the step he took, he scores a huge goal in game one against Boston, and every game that mattered, he was big in. And I think that speaks very highly of him as a person and a player. Like, he held that group down pretty good this year, and it was really cool to see him take that step.
Underlying importance in all of this, Canes just won. Jacob Slavin, over and over and over. Unbelievable contract, unbelievable defensive leader. Do the Sabres have that in Samuelson?
I think they do. I think they have a perfect partner for Rasmus Dahlin as well. And when Samuelson is healthy, it's a big difference. Mm-hmm. And how he can defend, and how he can use his physicality and his size, his length, and close down plays. But now we've seen the offense. We've seen the skating. He's not the fastest skater, but he gets in there. He knows how to get involved and find the open ice. And I think that it's allowed Dahlin to go to another level this year. And it was probably because of the partner that he was playing with in Samuelson.
Well, the gift of the Doan family is their ability to speak glowingly, articulately, intelligently about so many things and people. And so we won't just give you what Josh talked about with Samuelson, but here's his thoughts on Zach Benson as well.
He's in a class of his own. There's no real way to describe him and how he is off the ice. I got the unfortunate opportunity to sit next to him on the plane a couple times this year, and he's trying to come up with these brilliant ideas that he can invent something, and they're terrible ideas, and then Zach kind of feeds into it and gets him going, and he thinks it's a good idea. But him and he's an awesome kid, and is, like, loves the game of hockey. I think that's something that goes unnoticed about him, is he's a super nerd for hockey. Like, he could tell you every kid in the system from our team to the next, where or even like youth hockey. Like, he knows, he's just in the know with hockey and loves the game, and that's kind of what's allowed him to be who he is. But at the same time, if you talk about Chilliwack, he makes it seem like he's from like Beverly Hills or something. And it's like he's 2 hours west of me in Kamloops. He's like, oh, I'm never coming to see you. That place sucks. I'm like, you're in Chilliwack. Like,
yeah,
we're not acting like it's a huge difference here. Yeah. But he's an awesome kid and someone that I mean, we'd go to basketball and baseball games when we were on road cities, and he's just a fun kid to be around.
Oh my goodness!
Amazing. I can never.
I'm not going to Kamloops. That's too far. It has nothing to do there. Chilliwack's way better, although. Chilliwack is supposedly a very nice area. I'd have to check it out. But I've been to Kamloops, and Kamloops is pretty special.
What was your feature this year that you did with the players?
Well, the...
On ice. What were you doing?
Yeah, the Marty Takes
Marty
On.
Takes
that's
On.
Right.
Can you take on Benson this fall and his inventions?
I that could be something really fun. And trying to figure out... Because, you know what? Again, there's no such thing as a stupid question. I remind Torts that. There's just stupid answers. There's no such thing as a stupid invention. Everything started with maybe a bad idea or an idea that hadn't blossomed into something good yet. And then, boom, there you go. So I want to partner up with Benny on finding the next great invention.
Just be investigative. You are a quizzical person by nature. You want answers. The Knicks had the answer for the entire NBA this year, and you watched that on Saturday.
I watched that on Saturday, and once again, the Knicks went down double digits in the first quarter, but they were a tight, tight team, and Jalen Brunson is amazing. Now, funny enough, it was like, 11 years ago, he had tweeted something about one win away, but it was talking about the Chicago Blackhawks, because there's a Blackhawks fan in 2015, winning the cup, and sure enough, that led to the Knicks winning, the fans in New York City going crazy in Manhattan, I feel bad for the Spurs because I felt like they had a good team, but they weren't mature at the level that the Knicks were, and that was the big difference in that five-game series.
Less than 2 weeks away from the NHL draft here in Buffalo, Craig Button is around the corner to discuss some prospects the Sabres could look at. Have you attended a Sabres game during this past 25-26 campaign? We want to hear from you. Complete our postseason survey at sabres.com/survey, and you'll be entered for a chance to win Sabres jerseys and autographed pucks. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres fans, lock in your seats for the 26-27 season with the Sabres 10-game plan. Enjoy per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, and a guaranteed seat location. Choose from two plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, plus nine more games. Learn more, secure your plan today at sabres.com/10. The draft must be imminently close, and it's here in Buffalo, so we're hyped up even more. Craig Button from TSN, Director of Scouting, longtime friend, joins the show.
Actually, Director of Style. The scouting part is just a secondary title.
That's true.
Look at the style of this guy. It's awesome.
Welcome, welcome. How are you?
I am great. Marty knows, too, that I only style to keep the focus off my face. So, you know, it's just all part and parcel.
Don't be stealing my secret, too.
Well, Brian, and we can share the same secret.
Now, how is it that Marty and I looked at each other today and went, did neither one of us know that you were born in Rochester, New York? Is that real?
It is real. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no, totally real. Here, I'll give you the quick backstory. My mother was Punch Imlach's secretary, and my dad was with the Rochester Americans, which was the bomb team of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And my mom, they were having training camp in Peterborough, and my mom and a bunch of her friends went to went for a weekend in Peterborough to watch training camp. Punch and King Clancy said, yeah, come on over. That's where she met my dad. The rest is history. Yep, born in Rochester, New York.
Now, were you guys in Rochester a long time, or were you just born there and then moved back? How did I? Because, I mean, I'm a Rochester Americans Hall of Fame. Duffer is down there all the time to scout the Amherst, the connection with the Sabres. And we didn't even know that there was that connection with you. I've known you for all these years. So how long were you in Roch? Like, how did that all happen?
Well, my mother's from Toronto, and my dad was in Rochester, so that they got married and they moved there. And you know, I was just a kid. When I say a kid, I was a toddler when we moved out of there in '67, I believe, '67, '68, somewhere around there. So my memories of Rochester are based on going and visiting my grandmother and my family, my aunts and my cousins, and we would go there. And certainly over the years, was there lots and whatnot. So, but as a kid, no, it was just visiting there and everything. Wow. But, you know, I was lucky too, because my mother, you know, like the players that came through St. Michael's that played for the Leafs, you know, there was a different system. My dad with the Americans. I mean, it was so interesting for me that would the people that were that once I got into hockey, they would say, oh, I knew Craig's mother before I knew his father. And people like Al Arbor, whenever I saw him, he always called me the snotty-nosed little brat. He said, because you're a snotty-nosed little brat, your dad would bring in, because he played for Rochester, and he would say, snotty-nosed little brat. So that's how he always said, hey, you snotty-nosed little brat. So, you know, Don Cherry, like them. So yeah. To him, and you know, as a kid, you don't know these things, but you really appreciate them as you get older, and then you start to have these relationships. And really fascinating, you know, to hear people talk about my mother and my father. They would never talk about themselves that way. So, you know, just a real significant things I don't remember, but certainly things that have become very fond to me because of people and what they've told me about my mother and my father.
Well, Craig, we love the background, and we love the fact that for so long we get to this point on the calendar every year, and we value your take on what's next, you know, for teams in the NHL and their draft picks. And we'll get to that in a minute as far as what the Sabres could be looking at 27 in the first round this year. But your career was about building teams, and you won a Stanley Cup with Dallas, and you became a general manager in Calgary, a team that ultimately would go to the Stanley Cup final, mm-hmm. largely on what you constructed. We're coming off the Stanley Cup being presented last night to Carolina. I value what you see in this Hurricanes team and organization that allowed them for a second time to scale the mountain.
Well, I think there's two things, Brian and Marty. Number one is patience and belief in what you're doing. It's an overnight success in Carolina, right? 8 years. Like, I mean, it's amazing how 8 years can turn into an overnight success. And they've had their shortcomings and their stumbles, but you learn from them. And if you believe in what you're doing and you understand that at the core of it, you're doing the right things, then you just continue to persevere. Carolina, they lost to Florida, they lost to Tampa Bay, who went on to win Stanley Cups. They serve as a really good model. And I don't think the model's changing. I mean, if you don't have depth and you don't have the key areas of your team covered off, you're not going to be a contender. What you're always trying to do is build it out, become a little bit deeper. The playoffs are about who can go the hardest, the longest, and that's not going to change. And you need depth to do that. You need players to do different things in your lineup to be able to, ease the burden. You can't just lean on less players to do more. It just doesn't work like that when you're playing good teams. That's number one. I think number two is that, you know, when I talk about patience and belief, that you have to identify where you need to get stronger. I mean, I know Frankie Corrado and I were talking about this, and one of the things, the trade deadline. Marty, you were part of the trade deadline. We're talking, geez, Carolina, they really didn't do anything at the trade deadline. Well, they didn't need to do anything at the trade deadline because they'd done their work long before the trade deadline in getting a Keandre Miller, signing a Nikolaj Ehlers, adding some other depth players, getting Brandon Bussey off of waivers. You don't just wake up one day, oh, what about this Brandon Bussey? They've been tracking him. And so then when he became available, they were able to jump on him and everything. So I think that those are really key elements. And everybody's trying, that's when I say everybody, when you get to that point, you're trying to figure out exactly what you're trying to, what type of player, what you're trying to build out, where you're trying to get stronger. And the Carolina Hurricanes prove it. The Florida Panthers prove it. Look at the Tampa Bay Lightning when they lost four straight to Columbus in 2019. Mm-hmm. They went out and got Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow. They had the star power. They had it. So to go out and identify what you need and to know that that's what you need, I think is a real key. So those two things go hand in hand. I mean, again, I listen to, it's not comments, but it is comments, but, should Jared Bednar come back as coach of the Colorado Avalanche? Really? Seriously? That's a question you want to ask? I'll harness my inner John Tortorella. That might be the most ridiculous comment I've ever heard.
I think what he said is the stupidest question he's ever heard, but thanks for couching it in a much better way, Greg. That was awesome. Hey, it's a copycat league. It always is. Like, Florida's big and strong. Let's build big and strong teams. Now, Carolina, they got Ehlers at 165 pounds and Stankoven at 165, and, it's all about pace and speed and all of it. Do you think we're going to see maybe the draft players, the smaller players, getting a better look? Because all of a sudden, Carolina, it's not about being big and strong. It's about being quick and having massive pace.
Well, I think that those things go hand in hand. And I don't think, Marty, you know me well enough, Brian, you do. I don't scout with a tape measure. But you got to be very careful about understanding that it's hard, and you need size, you need weight. Logan Stankoven might not have height, but he's got lots of weight. And Taylor Hall's a hard player. Jordan Staal, Jordan Martinuk. You look through, and like the fourth line, look at the fourth line with Carrier and Jankowski and Robinson. If you don't have that type of a fourth line, if you don't have the third line, then you're putting a lot of pressure on those guys. And you get to the playoffs, everybody's going to try to zero in on what Bob Gainey referred to as the soft underbelly of your team. And so try not to have a soft underbelly. Do the ab crunches. Do the things that, give you a six-pack in your lineup. And I think that becomes really, really important. So, I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers has been a really good player in this league, and Sebastian Aho has been a really good player. But it's balancing it out and understanding, okay, how do we want to play and what type of players do we need to play that way? I think what Carolina has done is found a balance. There's not one formula. If there was only one way to win, it'd be easy. Everybody could do it, right? So there are different formulas and everything, but let me go back to what I said. Without depth, without strength throughout your lineup on the blue line and up front, you're not going to be able to be a contender. And I think that is the thing that you always have to have. And listen, Rob Brind'Amour talked about it post-game after winning the Stanley Cup. He said, you know, we believed in what we have. We're trying to find players that fit into what we have and what we're trying to do. Then you have the coach that guides it. I mean, it really is impressive.
It's amazing. And for anybody that's down and out about Carolina winning, don't look at their future years and the fact that they've got everybody locked up on really good contracts and have cap space. They are in terrific shape as the reigning Stanley Cup champions. Buffalo made great progress this year, Craig. We know that. And especially at the end, almost an added bonus to see so much from so many younger, inexperienced players being able to come in. As an organization, how do you think that shapes where they're drafting this year, because it's a little lower than what we've seen in past years, and what they believe in their, you know, current team and system? How do you think it impacts this year's draft?
Well, I'm not so sure it impacts the draft like in a massive way. I mean, when you're picking in the top 10 and you're picking, you know, in the top half of the draft, you're, okay, what can we do? What kind of player do we need to get us over the hump? Well, the Buffalo Sabres have drafted high. They drafted well. You know, Zach Benson's a great example of that, just the most recent example. And again, you give your players every opportunity to be the best they can be. You give your players the feeling that this is a good place. Players, they want to win. They're competitors. I mean, we all hear about the taxes and the tax-free states and everything. Nobody was going to Florida for 20 years. Mm-hmm. It didn't just start being a tax-free state. When the Dallas Stars were struggling, nobody was going to Dallas. And that's just a fact. Tampa Bay, they won the Cup in 04. Nobody was going there for a period of time. You create an environment where the players have a chance to have success. Obviously, being treated well is paramount in any organization, in any industry. But you give players a chance to be successful, and you're going to become attractive. I don't think there's any question about it. And I think that for the Buffalo Sabres, we know what a great hockey market it is. We know what the passionate fan base is all about in Buffalo. And, you know, with some disappointment and some anger and some speed bumps and, you know, really some failures, now you see what it's all about when you have a chance to have success and when you do have that success. And Buffalo did have that. And you talk about Carolina, Brian. Buffalo has lots of things in order. They have a really, really, really good team. They have players under good contracts. Listen, it's in flux. It is going to be every year, and you got to adjust and adapt. But I think the Buffalo Sabres are in a really, really good spot. And I think this past year, where the players just really took it to another level, it's one thing for management to believe in the players. The players believe in themselves now, and I think that becomes really significant and makes your team that much stronger.
Now, the Sabres are picking 27th, and I look at some of the players that they've been able to pick around that. You have Matias Samuelsson, that was 32nd a few years back. You got J.J. Paterka, who's 34th. Yuri Kulik was 28th. There's players to be found there. So one player that I don't know much about is Ilya Morozov, or is it Morozov? How do you say it? But anyway, the kid came over from Russia at 15 and played in the NCAA at Miami, Ohio at 17 years old. He won't be 18 until August. What can you tell us about that player, and would that be somewhere the Sabres would want to go at 27?
So let me just, like, before I answer that specific question, you just talked about Matias Samuelsson. You talked about J.J. Paterka. So J.J. Paterka turns into Josh Stone. Oh, yeah, by the way, a guy who went through the draft and then was a second-round draft pick. Keep paying attention. Keep watching these players. Matias Samuelsson, I mean, I've watched Matias since he was 15 years old, and you guys have watched him. You know, he comes in, he's a pick, and he gets the contract. How can anybody give Matias Samuelsson that? Well, I'll tell you how you give Matias Samuelsson that, because he's a darn good player. Patience. I'm going back to patience here. And so the you've got to be patient with your young players. Everybody wants them to be somewhere yesterday, the players included. Be patient with them, support them. I think Matias Samuelson's a great example. Kulik had some injuries, but he's shown some real capability. On to Morozov or Morozov, however we want to call him. We know who we're talking about. He's a big, strong, you know what he's, to me, he's a Jordan Staal type player. And then so now, why don't we start using examples from successful teams? But that type of player, he's big, he's heavy. I don't know how much offense he has. When I say, I don't think he's going to be the 70-point player in the NHL. But he plays the game, and we'll use this term, the right way. He plays it with a real edge. He plays it with his head. And when you watch somebody that can get himself invested and be successful in so many different areas of the game, like a Jordan Staal, it won't always show up in terms of the stat sheet individually, but where it does show up is your team having a chance to have success and to be able to impose yourself. Big, strong centers like Ilya Morozov don't come along very well. Mm. Like, it might be a stretch to think that he'll be there at 27, but I know how teams bet on skill a little bit more sometimes than this type of a player, but he's got lots of those elements that help teams be really successful.
Rogowski, Nordmark, Dagenet, among others that you have kind of on a little short list for us just today here to give people a sample of names that could be around for the Sabres. Take us through a couple of those guys, a little overview on what they could bring.
So Brooks Rogowski, who played in Oshawa, I mean, he's 6'7". Like, he moves, he skates. Again, somebody that you look at, maybe the offense isn't going to be high-end, but those players, and we talk about the big players, so it's interesting. Now, here we're talking about Carolina, to your point, Marty. You know, you should never overlook a player that might not be as tall that you think can be better, ever, you know. So I'm just looking at some players, and I start to look at the team in Buffalo and some of their players. Like Noah Austlin, I think you guys would agree with me. Yeah. He's going to be a really good player. So now you got Tage Thompson. Josh Norris has been really good. You know, how does it look like if you get a big Brooks Rogowski up the middle of the ice playing? He can skate. He's got some edge to him. Again, the offense might not be high end, but players like Brooks Rogowski can help you carry play and make life uncomfortable for opponents. Marcus Nordmark, a Swedish player, very, very gifted goal scorer. He's a big winger, and he knows how to score goals. And he may be there, he may not be there. I don't know if there's a wider variance on a player than there is on Marcus Nordmark, because his skill is obvious. The other part with Marcus is there's a lot of in and out with him. So is this maturity, or is this who he is? You think scouting is easy? You know, you see the skill, and then you start to see the in and out, and you ask yourself, okay, what can this mean? How do we deal with it and carry on from that point on? You know, Maddox Dagenet is such great improvement this year in Quebec. Yep. A high pick, very skilled. Skating really came along. I see him more as a winger rather than a center. He played center in junior, but I see him more as a winger, somebody that he wants to play inside hockey. He's not interested in having the puck outside the dots. He gets to where it's dangerous. He gets to where it's hard. And that's where the rewards come from. And the growth that I've seen in him in 2 years has been really significant. You know, I mean, there's no Connor McDavid skaters in this draft, but when you watch the pace that he's learned to play at, how he's raised the pace of his play, skating has improved. There's every reason to believe that Maddox can be a really good, solid winger in the National Hockey League that can give you goals. And he competes. So the difference between him and Nordmark is that I don't think the questions with Maddox are on the in and out play like they are on Nordmark. And again, I allow for maturity and understanding and getting around the right people. And then you got Juho Pippurainen, a right shot defenseman. He played in the Liga this year as a 17-year-old. And if you go and watch the game, you watch Pippurainen, you better watch closely, because you know what the word comes to mind? Efficient. He is efficient. The puck goes to the right places at the right time. The puck comes out of your zone cleanly. He knows how to alleviate pressure. He alleviates pressure. He doesn't add to it. He makes plays under duress. He just knows how to play the game. And he's got this economy of effort He's highly competitive, but he's got this economy of effort that allows him to play big minutes because he's so smart and he's so detailed in his understanding of the game and what needs to happen for the team to be successful. Just a really good, solid player. Again, if you want to look at his numbers and his points, you might not be looking at somebody that would be like highly attractive early in the park. People bet on skill. I get it. But Juho is a player. I have no doubt in my mind he's going to be at least a top three defenseman, right shot guy in the National Hockey League, play big minutes, play all the different situations, and be a real good competitive player for whatever team drafts him.
Let me ask you about Maddox Dagenais, because you talked about him. I know his dad, Pierre, played in the NHL, played juniors against him. He had a NHL shot that father, when he was 15 years old, he used to come out and shoot on the NHL goalies, you know, for summer practice because he could shoot the puck. Does Maddox have the same thing? You talk about having compete. His dad didn't have to compete, so is he a totally different player than his father was?
I don't know about totally different. What he does have, like his father does, is he's got that shooting ability.
Yeah.
I mean, and he gets himself ready. I mean, you remember Pierre. Pierre would get into that spot and he could snap it, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Maddox can do exactly that same thing. But when I talk about inside hockey, Maddox gets invested in the hard parts of the game. He goes into the inner slot, the slot area. He drives the net. When I say inside hockey, top of the circles, inside the dots to the net. You want to get rewarded in the NHL with goals, that's where you better be willing to play. And they call it the hard areas, the dirty areas, but that's where the rewards come. Because if you don't go there, you're not getting any rewards. It's like going into your garden and not getting your hands dirty. Well, you're not going to be able to plant anything if you don't get your hands dirty in the garden. It's the same thing with scoring in the NHL.
Craig, thank you. Perfect analogy to end it here as we, are nicely into springtime.
You don't want to wear the beautiful shirts, though. You got to get dirty, so you leave that at home. So that's good.
We'll see you soon, Craig. Thanks again.
Thank you,
Craig Button from TSN. Draft is a week from this Friday in Buffalo. We'll continue Sabres Live after this.
Resorts and casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, time for Marty's less than 43-second World Cup update.
World Cup update right now, Spain and Cape Verde 0-0 at the half.
You're missing the lead. The U.S. won 4-1.
Oh, yeah, they did. And Canada tied 1-1. That was a tough one. But the U.S., the analysts said that was the best first half of World Cup soccer the U.S. had ever played. They were up 3-0.
That's the kind of analysis we're looking for, Marty.
Well, I'm going to go with that. I don't know what I'm watching. No, I know soccer enough. They were dominant, so that was awesome.
Well, I know what we witnessed in the Calder Cup. The Marlies are 2 wins away from winning their second in the last 8 years. They are up 2-0 on Carolina's Farm Club Chicago. Old friend Alex Nylander with a penalty shot goal in the midst of what turned out to be a 5-4 overtime game two win for Toronto.
Not the best effort by Caden Primo, who came back in game two after not playing in game one and everything, but he looked a little bit like Ryan Miller with the poke check, but he got beat. Nylander went to the back end.
Marlies up 2-0 games 3, 4, and 5, if necessary, in Toronto this week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Happy birthday to one of your favorites, Mario Gosselin, 63.
Mario Gosselin was one of the goalies in Quebec with the Nordiques that I watched when I was a kid. Daniel Bouchard, Mario Gosselin, Mario Brunetta, and all of that. And I have a picture when I was a kid. We went to a softball game, the Nordiques softball game. And Mario Gosselin took a picture with me and my brother. And I've got both my arms in a cast. I had an ATV accident maybe a few weeks before, and I've got both arms in a cast.
A fascinating figure in music was born on this day in 1941. Harry Nilsson, who was known as the American Beatle because the Beatles loved his work. Okay. He passed at age 52 in 1994, but I came to know of Harry's work through a song that I knew of his, Jump Into the Fire, but that song was covered by Chris Cornell and released after Chris's death on the album No One Sings Like You Anymore. He is a fascinating figure in the history of music. Great music weekend. Was able to see MGK, Wiz Khalifa, Duane. That was all on Saturday. Spanish love songs yesterday. So in a good place as we head to Tuesday. We'll see you then.